So our next category is celestial events. For the purposes of our 2012 exploration, the category of celestial events focuses upon the natural cycles of our sun. Through the geologic record and the correlations described previously, we have a reliable record of how much radiant energy, property called solar luminosity, has reached the Earth in the past. This factor has been shown to play a key role in driving the changes of climate and civilization's response to those changes. From the time that Galileo's first telescopes allowed astronomers to observe the heavens, European astronomers have known that our sun experiences regular cycles of intense magnetic storms called sunspots, followed by predictable periods of quiet. These cycles have been observed on a regular basis since the year 1610, and since the measurements began, 23 cycles of sunspots averaging 11 years each have occurred, with the last beginning in May of 1996. Precisely when cycle 23 would end, however, remained a mystery until the spring of 2006, when the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, reported the event that astronomers had been waiting for. On March 10th of that year, the magnetic storms and solar flares suddenly stopped and the sun became quiet, signaling the end of the 23rd sunspot cycle. The quiet, however, was misleading. The end of one cycle is an indication that a new cycle with new storms is beginning on the sun. What makes the new solar cycle that we're experiencing today so different, however, is that the strength of sunspots observed from 1986 to 1996 suggests that sunspot cycle number 24 is going to be one of the most intense ever recorded. The next sunspot cycle will be 30% to 50% stronger than the previous ones, says Masumi Dikpati of National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado. David Hathaway of the National Space Science and Technology Center agrees, suggesting that the sunspots created in the previous cycle are expected to amplify themselves and reappear as big sunspots, he says, in the new cycle. An unexpected twist, however, regarding when the new cycle will peak with its greatest intensity occurred in the spring of 2008. Even though cycle 24 had definitely started by that date, three sunspots with the same characteristics of the previous cycle also appeared on the 28th of the month. NASA's Hathaway explained what this means in the technical bulletin. He said, "We now have two different solar cycles in progress at the same time. Solar cycle 24 has begun, but solar cycle 23 has not yet ended." In other words, the cycles are overlapping. And while such activity has happened in the past, it's generally short-lived. Now, this is important to us because the peak of the new cycle is directly related to the old cycle's activity. Well, based upon the behavior of the present sunspots and taking into consideration the observations of the 1986 to 1996 solar cycles, both NASA and the National Center for Atmospheric Research have calculated the same year for the peak of the present cycles, a time called the solar maximum. The time of the solar cycle 24's greatest intensity. Perhaps it's no surprise that the projected time coincides with the Mayan calculations of our sun's alignment with the center of our galaxy. It's the year 2012. If these predictions are accurate, the sun's magnetic extremes will be second in intensity only to those of the massive solar storms of 1859, when the aurora borealis lit up the night sky as far south as Mexico. At that time, however, we didn't have communications technology, satellites, and GPS that could be disrupted by such storms. Because the present world age defines a span of time that includes most of what historians consider to be civilization, it makes tremendous sense to use the Mayan Great Cycle of 5,125 years as the window of time considered. When we use the time code calculator to find patterns of Earth events, however, those patterns happen over periods of time that are much longer than the 5,000-year cycle of the world age. They happen over periods of time that are studied on a geologic timescale, covering hundreds of thousands, sometimes even millions of years. So to answer the question of what Earth events we can expect for 2012, we must look to the larger parent cycle, of which the current world age is a small part. This is the entire precessional cycle discussed in Chapter 2, a cycle that lasts for approximately 26,000 years. Because each cycle holds clues that give us a clearer picture of what we can expect, we will apply the time code calculator to both of them. So within the broad categories of human events, Earth events, and celestial events, and keeping the 5,000 and 26,000 year cycles in mind, we can now at last build a bridge to the past that gives us a window into our future. So let's begin. First, we'll use the time code calculator as we have in earlier discussions to identify the key date within each cycle that tells us where we can find the patterns that will repeat in 2012. A summary of those calculations reveals, first, that for the world age cycle of 5,125 years, the seed date for the conditions that we can expect to repeat in 2012 occurred in the year 1155 BC. So 1155 becomes the first date that tells us where to look in the past for what we can expect in 2012. Secondly, for the larger precessional cycle of 25,626 years, the seed date for the conditions we can expect in 2012 occurred in the year 13,824 BC. So this becomes the second date that we will use for our 2012 insights. With these dates from our time code calculator and our three categories of Earth, celestial, and human events in mind, we now have everything we need to know where and how to discover in the past what we can expect for 2012. Following is a high-level summary of the events that occurred for these three categories during the years 1155 BC and 13,824 BC. As for Earth events, let's look at the readings for the magnetic fields first. The readings for global magnetic strength in our calculations are based upon two studies, both using the same method of determining past magnetic intensity. Interestingly, both studies tell the same story. For the year 1155 BC, they show a magnetic intensity in the range of 10.5 on a scale named the VDAM scale, which stands for Virtual Dipole Axial Moment. And for the year 13,824 BC, the readings range between 5.25 and 7.25 on the same scale. These readings suggest that the present magnetic intensity of approximately 7.5 is right in line with precisely what we would expect for where we are in the present cycle. The global temperature readings in this summary are from the Vostok Antarctic ice core samples, the results of which were published in 1999, as previously mentioned. The cores used in the study reveal the same trend. In 1155 BC, there was a global warming that averaged approximately 1 degree Celsius across the Earth, while the warming indicated for 13,824 BC was twice that, at about 2 degrees Celsius. In general, it appears that the rise in global temperatures that we see today is precisely in the range with those that have occurred in the past at this point in the cycle. The same studies used to determine global temperatures from the Antarctic ice cores also correlate those temperatures with the polar ice conditions at the core sample locations. The results for both the 1155 BC and 13,824 BC dates show the same trend of melting at the poles. The data seems to support what we intuitively know about the relationship between temperatures and ice. And that is simply this. When Earth's temperature increases, the volume of ice decreases proportionally. This appears to be precisely the pattern that we're seeing today early in the 21st century with the breakup of the South Pole's ice sheet and the unprecedented melting of the North Pole's ice pack, reported by top climate researchers at the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Boulder, Colorado in 2008. The data for the celestial events is next. By calculating the strength of Earth's magnetic fields in the past, scientists are now able to calculate celestial events, such as how much of the sun's radiant energy was reaching the Earth throughout the previous cycles. New models linking ocean temperatures with certain forms of oxygen found in the deep sea core samples now provide a continuous record of how much solar energy has reached the Earth over long periods of time. Well, the readings are relative. In other words, they're expressed in terms of less energy in one time or more energy in another time, and describe the sun's influence over a period of 90,000 years, which just happens to be about the same time of one complete cycle of glaciers. What's important here is that although the total amount of energy reaching the Earth from the sun was lower in 13,824 BC than during the 1155 BC time period, there was still a sharp increase in the amount of radiant energy from the sun for both of the dates. So with the increased energy, there was also a corresponding warming of the Earth that shows up in the ice core records as well. Once again, this is the same pattern that we're seeing today with the decline in the magnetic strength and the same increase in temperatures. The parallels between the human events of the past and those that we see happening in the world today are absolutely striking. The year 1155 BC, for example, was a pivotal year for one of the greatest civilizations known to have ever existed in the history of our species, the superpower of Egypt, as shown in the details that follow. It was during this year when many of the systems that were needed to maintain such a world power failed, and it was the convergence of so many failures that eventually led to the collapse of this civilization. These events happened within the single year that is the fractal of the entire world age, 1155 BC. They also appear to be repeating in large part during the 2012 window that leads to the end of the same world age today. As with any world power, much of the civilization and government of Egypt depended upon the way the empire was ruled. Egypt's last great emperor, Ramses III, died in 1155 BC, possibly due to smallpox. His death and the chaos that followed began the decline of Egypt's most powerful dynasty, the 20th dynasty. The Egyptian decline is attributed to a number of different factors that all seem to contribute to a prolonged war to fight off foreign invaders during precisely this time. These factors include the heavy cost of war itself, the depletion of Egypt's financial resources to fund the war. Egyptian scholars also find records of the first recorded labor strikes occurring during this time, possibly linked to food shortages due to abrupt climate change and the crop damage from the natural disasters that were occurring at the close of the cycle. As we near the end of the present great cycle, in many ways, it appears that we are following the dangerous pattern that we see in 1155 BC. Similar to the way global conditions taxed the systems of Egypt and led to its eventual collapse, today's changing climate and competition for disappearing resources, including shortages of oil and food, has led to the violence that sparked many of the wars in the 20th century, now the early 21st century. Recognizing this pattern and knowing where it led in the past begs a question that must be asked today. The question is simply this. Will we learn from the cycles of our past and avoid following into the ancient trap that pits us against one another at the end of our cycle? Well, time will reveal the answer. Because the year 13,824 BC is generally considered to be a time before civilization, at least civilization as we know it today, we really have no indications of how the changes affected human populations that may have existed during this time. So for now, it appears that 1155 BC is the year that points us to the seed and holds the clues as to what 2012 holds in store for the people of this world. There is a caveat that I'd like to share with regard to what we can expect for the strength of Earth's magnetic fields in the 2012 zone and the growing concern that we may experience a magnetic flip-flop in that time frame. Because so many of the changes we're discussing seem to hinge upon the planet's magnetic intensity, let's explore them just a little deeper, what these readings are really telling us. The continuous records of Earth's magnetic fields made possible by the Antarctic ice cores have confirmed one very powerful piece of information. They show that the overall strength of our planet's magnetic intensity must drop to a certain level before the field can ever reverse. This threshold appears to be the reading that registers below the number 2 on the VDAM scale. This is important because if the historic patterns hold true, the numbers in the ice core readings and the data from today show that we are nowhere near that threshold at present. Additionally, it's unlikely that in the years immediately before and immediately after 2012 that will change. That is, unless something happens that is not part of the past cycle and something that we are not expecting. There are extenuating circumstances, for example, that could shake up the delicate balance of what scientists call Earth's magnetic dynamo. If that balance were disturbed enough, it is entirely possible that the shakeup could throw the fields into a dramatic decline, followed by a 180-degree reversal or the flip-flopping of the South and North Poles. While there is no historic reason to believe that these scenarios are on the horizon for the immediate future, they're often mentioned as possibilities in popular 2012 literature, so I mention them here. Recent discoveries regarding the way Earth's magnetic fields work suggest that rather than a single field, there are actually multiple fields that merge or couple to create the magnetic shield that protects us from the sun's high-energy effects. Anything that creates a disturbance large enough within the Earth itself or within the atmosphere could potentially disrupt the balance of those fields. In other words, anything packing enough of a wallop could send the system into a tailspin. And although there are a number of scenarios that could cause such an effect, the ones of greatest concern are among the following. First, a disruption of the fields is possible due to the unusually strong burst of particles from a super solar flare or a major magnetic storm in the sun. Secondly, a galactic superwave of high-energy cosmic rays and radiation could affect the fields, such as the one that bolts through the universe every 15,000 years or so. Third, a physical jolt to the planet itself from something like the impact of a comet or a meteor strike could upset these fields. Fourth, a physical jolt to the planet from inside the planet itself, such as we felt from the earthquake that caused the 2004 tsunami that was so powerful it affected the wobble of Earth's orbit. Fifth, the effects of what is called a near miss from a large orbiting body, such as an asteroid, a comet, or a small planet, could potentially influence the magnetic fields of the Earth. And sixth, the push-pull effect of Earth's crossing the equator of the Milky Way galaxy and the change of the forces as we make that transition could potentially have the impact to affect the magnetic fields of the Earth. So although these descriptions are simplified, they're enough to describe the caveat to the possibility of a polar reversal in the 2012 window. They certainly sound ominous. However, the geologic record that describes the same crossing of the Milky Way's equator during the last time we closed the cycle 26,000 years ago gives us absolutely no reason to suspect that we'll see any of these events happening immediately before or right after the actual year of 2012. Time Code 17 summarizes what the historic and the present data reveal, stating that there is nothing in the geologic record to suggest that Earth's magnetic fields will reverse before or immediately following the 2012 end date of the Mayan cycle. It's important to bear in mind that the world age transition marked by 2012 is a process rather than an event, and it's a process that is already well underway. According to the calculations that we described in the introduction to this audiobook, Earth slipped into the zone of the alignment that marks the cycle's end somewhere around 1980. This means that not only is the alignment already happening, but the effects of the alignment are also already happening, effects that we're experiencing as the extremes in rainfall, temperature, hurricanes, forest fires, and drought in certain places of the world. This also tells us that we've been dealing with the most controversial effects of this shift for nearly 30 years, and we've been doing so successfully. The bottom line to what the historic records seem to show is that while the strength of the magnetic fields has definitely declined, it appears that by doing so, those fields are now in the same place that they have been at this time in past cycles, low enough to trigger the changes in climate and life, yet high enough to prevent them from going into a full reversal. In other words, the fields are just where they need to be at just the right point in time to close one world age and begin the next. While it's impossible to know for certain exactly what the 2012 end of our world age has in store for us, now we can know with confidence the facts of what similar cycles and seed points within those cycles have held in the past. Armed with the facts that our time code calculator has provided, we can now build a reasonable picture of what we can expect as we move through the 2012 end date and even beyond. And we can do so with confidence because of the clear reference dates that the Mayans designed into their ancient calendar. The conditions for the world age reference dates of the past describe what we can expect for the years just before and immediately following the 2012 Mayan end date. Although there are over 12,000 years between the 5,000 and the 26,000 year cycles, in general, the conditions are remarkably similar. At the time of both cycles, we find that, number one, global magnetic strength was in the same general range as it is today. This places the present reading of 7.5 precisely in the range of past world age measurements. Number two, we find no indication of a 180-degree polar reversal, barring the special circumstances that we just described. Number three, we see an increase in global temperatures of between 1 and 2 degrees Celsius, placing the warming that we see today in the same range as those of world ages past. Number four, there was a sharp increase in the amount of the sun's energy reaching the Earth during both of the cycles described in previous world ages. The increase that we see today seems to follow this pattern. And number five, the melting of the polar ice, the collapse of the ice caps, and the rise in the global sea levels from the cycles of the past suggests that the warming we are seeing today will be quick, brief, and followed by a period of general cooling. Time Code 18 summarizes what the Time Code calculator has just shown us, indicating that the Earth, human, and celestial conditions of today are in the same range as the key reference dates of the past. In other words, the changes of today are just what we'd expect for the end of a great world age. With these conditions in mind, the rare alignment marked by the winter solstice of December 2012 appears to be the cosmic marker that the ancient Mayans and others identified as the time of such great and cyclic changes here on Earth. But in addition to the physical changes of Earth itself, They foretold of the emotional and spiritual changes that the people of the earth would undergo to come to terms with the new weather, land, ocean, and climate that the changes bring. From this perspective, our 2012 end date truly is the end of one kind of balance that we've grown accustomed to and feel comfortable with, and it's the beginning of something brand new. In other words, when we hear ourselves saying that we want things to get back to normal, we may just discover that the world created by the changes is the new normal. The opportunity here is for us to benefit from our individual and collective experiences of the last 5,125 years, and then to apply what we've learned as the foundation for the sixth world age of humankind, the next great cycle. It may be no coincidence that it's only now, in the last years of the darkest part of our cyclic journey through the heavens, just when we are faced with the greatest threats to our future and even our survival, that we find ourselves living at this rare moment in time when the motion of the universe is converging in just the right way to give us just the right conditions that lead to a shift in the way we think of our world and ourselves. In the same way that we would check the road signs throughout a cross-country trip to make sure we're going in the right direction, 2012 is like an end-of-cycle reality check. It allows us to think about where we've been, evaluate the choices in the direction of our past, and to make any mid-course corrections needed to complete our cosmic journey successfully. Such a possibility exists only when everything we need to make such a change appears in a single window of time. The 2012 zone of alignment appears to be just such a window of time. Chapter 7, Choice Point 2012, Armageddon or the Second Eden. When we combine 5,000 years of messages from our ancestors with the best science of today, the uniqueness of our time in history becomes clear. And as it does, the message of 2012 begins to make tremendous sense. If the lessening of Earth's magnetic shield allows more of the sun's energy to create greater change, and the way we respond to that change is the catalyst for our spiritual growth, and both are happening at precisely the same time that a rare 5,000-year cycle combines with an even rarer alignment that happens just once every 26,000 years, then it's as if the cosmos has somehow conspired to shower us with the influence of what José Argüelles calls the galactic synchronization beam. What a rare and precious gift. How we receive our cosmic offering is the choice that we're making individually and collectively right this minute. We're doing so by the way we choose to live our lives in the presence of the greatest challenges of recorded human history. We all know that the world is shifting before our eyes, faster than we can teach it from our textbooks or chronicle it in our documentaries. The ice caps in the poles are disappearing, the sea levels are rising, food is disappearing, and superstorms are wiping out entire communities, villages, and cities from the face of the earth. They're happening now, and the pace is quickening. While our ancestors warned that our lifetime would herald precisely such events, the heart of their message was less about the events themselves and more about our response to them. In other words, we were told that the changes in our world would become the catalyst for changes within us. In the presence of dwindling resources, do we fight one another for what remains, or do we pull together and solve the problems that confront us? Do the nations with the most money, power, and leverage use their resources to grab the remaining deposits of oil, fertile valleys, and clean water, leaving others to fend for themselves, or do we recognize that we're a family? Earth is our home, and that we're much stronger when we solve the problems of a changing world together than when we do so as a fragmented civilization clutching at the last vestiges of an unsustainable way of life. We may well discover that our answer to these questions is the great secret to understanding 2012 and the message of our past. Our ancestors went to tremendous lengths to preserve something that they wanted us to have today. The fruit of their labor is scattered across the face of the earth, in the temples, tombs, and monuments that mark their legacy. Each one carries a message. And as different as each message appears to be from the others, the common thread that weaves through all of them, binds them together, is that they all tell us something about ourselves. That something is the message of renewal that comes with the dawning of a new cycle, the new world age that allows us to succeed where others have failed and to assure nothing less than the future of our species by learning from the mistakes of our past. Today, the changing landscape of the earth is forcing us into a new way of thinking, a new way of being, and a new way of life. Perhaps the greatest awakening that we're experiencing is the discovery of the fact that we have a choice. One of the most unsettling revelations, as well as greatest messages of hope, in Michael Drosnin's book, The Bible Code, is found in a sequence of words that relates directly to the Mayan 2012 end date. Located within the coded Torah, at a point that links the text to the Hebrew year 5772, the year 2012 in the Gregorian calendar, are two ominous words that read, Earth annihilated. Without a doubt, to read such words coded into the Bible is a frightening experience. Certainly seems to play into the gloom and doom scenarios that suggest we're heading toward a time of Armageddon and the end of the world. Closer look at the code, however, reveals something quite unexpected. A second sequence of words that describes a second possibility and offers a ray of hope for the same year. In his discussion of just what such a message may be telling us, Drosnin first describes how the words darkness and gloom intersect the word comet and appear with the 2012 end date. He then calls our attention to a curious phrase located near the text that describes the threat and the words that seem to contradict it. The phrase offers the welcome news of another scenario. When it's translated, it reads, "It will be crumbled, driven out, I will tear it to pieces in 5772, or the year 2012. With these words, who or whatever is responsible for the Bible code itself seems to be telling us that there is another earth-saving outcome possible for the time that the code states earth annihilated. Rather than earth being destroyed, in this scenario, it's the threat itself that will be destroyed on that date. So which is it? Does 2012 mark the end of the world or the end of the threat that may destroy the world? How can both outcomes be possible for the same moment in time? Well, a third phrase found in the same proximity of the code seems to hold the key to this paradox and answer our question. It's a phrase that appears in other places throughout the Bible code as well, especially when specific outcomes such as elections, wars, and assassinations are identified. Accompanying the sequence that describes the gravest outcome for our future are four words that offer hope while asking the reader of the code a simple and direct question. When they are translated, the words simply read, "Will you change it? Will you change it?" Mirroring the discoveries of modern physics and the beliefs of our most cherished spiritual traditions, these four words remind us of one of the greatest secrets of our experience. That secret is that we are part of our world rather than separate from it. And as part of our experience, we play a powerful role in what happens in our lives for 2012 and even beyond. In fact, if we're to believe the Bible code, our role is so powerful that we can even alter the course of an event that was identified 3,000 years ago with the potential to end this world. The words, "Will you change it?" appear to be a direct question to those who would be certain to read the ancient code maker's message. It's a question to us. It's as if whoever created the code knew that the technology to understand the message would only become available at the time of the threat itself. Because we've now discovered the message, we're also ready to participate in the end of time to transcend the darkest possibilities. In this way, the Bible code offers yet another example of an ancient message that identifies our time in history as a gateway of opportunity. The ancient Hopi prophecy begins by stating that the earth will shake three great times. With these words, author Robert Bossier begins describing the large-scale events that serve as the time markers for the Hopi prophecy of the fourth world and the end of time. When we think of the defining events of the 20th century, the meaning of such signs is unmistakable. The prophecy begins by stating that there was first the Great War, and then the second one, when the swastika rose above the battlefields of Europe to end in the rising sun sinking in a sea of blood. The specifics of such a verbal time map leave little doubt in our mind as to what they describe. There have been only two world wars in the last 5,000 years, and the associations of Germany's swastika and Japan's rising sun have happened in only one of them. In the minds of the Hopi elders, there is no doubt as to what this prophecy means or where the events of the last 100 years place us in history's timeline. Before his death in 1999 at the age of 108, for example, Chief Dan Ivahima, the eldest elder of the Hopi Nation at that time, clarified the Hopi perspective in his message to mankind that he revealed to the United Nations. "Now we are at the very end of our trail," he began. "We are instructed in our ancient prophecy that this would occur. We were told that someone would try to go up to the moon, that they would bring something back from the moon, and that after that time, nature would show signs of losing its balance. Now we see that coming about. Floods, drought, earthquakes, and great storms are occurring and causing much suffering." The signs that Chief Dan shared were given to the Hopi people hundreds of years ago. In addition to the description of the swastika and the two great wars, such signs do, in fact, seem to describe things that can only be attributed to the 20th century in the events of our lifetime. From the Hopi perspective, the shift to the next world is already well underway. Of that, they are absolutely certain. What makes the prophecy especially intriguing, however, is that it does not tell us how the fourth world of our time will end. Just the way a mystery novel leaves us hanging in anticipation of the next chapter, the Hopi prophecy stops short of describing how the earth will shake after the two great wars. They can't go that far because there is an unknown factor that prevents predicting any outcome with certainty. That factor is us. We are the factor. This is where our choice comes in. Just as the Bible code suggests that we are choosing the outcome for 2012, the Hopi prophecy states that we are the ones writing the last chapter of the fourth world story. And we're doing so by the way we choose to live our lives every day. Bossier's translation continues, stating, "The prophecy does not say what the third shaking of the earth will be, for it depends upon which path humankind will walk. The path of greed, comfort, and profit, or the path of love, strength, and balance." Within this single statement, we find the Hopi message to our time in history. That message is that while the change is inevitable, our response to the change is a matter of choice. It's our choice. For example, as to how we respond to the shortage of food that suddenly appeared at a global level in 2008. It's our choice as to how we meet the needs of those who suddenly find a lifetime of work washed away by the waves of a record storm surge or tsunami. While the evidence shows that we are in a time of certain change, the message of our past reminds us that we're the ones that choose how we treat one another as we respond to that change. What sets the Hopi prophecy apart from so many others is that the Hopi offer an action plan for our time of change. The instructions as to how we choose love, strength, and balance were left to their eldest elders in the way that assured they would be preserved until the end of time. With those instructions, we are shown the path to prepare and accommodate the shift into the next great age. To ease the transition that comes with a shift between worlds, the Hopi say the Creator gave them a life plan to share with those who would listen. The purpose and location of that plan is described in the prophecy itself. It tells us that the Creator's life plan exists as a simple map holding a profound message, and that it's preserved on a rock face in northern Arizona's Hopi village of Oribe, a place called Prophecy Rock. What makes this map so unusual is that it's not a conventional map of places. Instead, it's a map of a way of being, a map of consciousness. It tells us the state of consciousness that's required to survive the great changes that accompany the end of our world age. No one knows how long the images on Prophecy Rock have existed, or precisely who placed them there, but one thing's certain: the rock's message is central to the Hopi prophecy. Just the way the tablets of Moses became the guidelines for a way of life of an entire civilization, the Oribe map holds the core of a life-affirming philosophy for the Hopi and all who recognize its truth. While there are multiple layers of meaning in general, the message has remained constant. The code on Prophecy Rock centers around two parallel lines across the map, two possible paths that humankind may choose as a way of life. Each path leads to a very different experience. The lower path shows people healthy and vital, living to advanced ages and harvesting corn from an abundant field. The upper path shows people as well. A closer look, however, shows that their heads are not attached to their bodies and are floating just above their shoulders, and that the line beneath them is rough and jagged and there's no evidence of food. Boissier's translation states that the upper path shows what happens with people who use their mind instead of their faith in the spirit way. In place of the abundant crops seen on the lower path, the upper path shows that there are storms over a rocky terrain. To those who can read the map, its message is clear. The lower path leads to a life of health and abundance. The upper path leads to a difficult life of lack and suffering. Well, the good news is that the map also shows a third path, a vertical line that connects the jagged and the smooth paths. This line is said to represent the ladder of choice. It's because the ladder exists that those who have chosen either way of life in the past can change and choose the other path. The Hopi say that as we approach the end of this world age, there will be a time of confusion, during which many people will do just that. The conditions of the earth will move them from the comfort zone of the past and force them to choose a new path, a new way of life, a new way of being. To the Hopi, this time of confusion is also seen as a time of what they call purification. It's a time that always happens just before the earth's cleansing. And just as the intense fires that roar through a forest to make way for the growth of new and healthy trees, the traditions of our past have prepared us for the great clearing that comes with the end of each world age. From the Hopi perspective, the clearing is necessary and it's inevitable. Because we're part of Earth's garden, it's an opportunity for us to clear the debris of 5,000 years of history and embrace the best of what we've learned. And with that embrace comes the opportunity to choose what we value in the new world age and leave behind the things that have caused the pain and the suffering of our past, the judgments, the bias, and the beliefs that guide our choices. If the conditions of such purification, like the extremes in climate, the failure of unsustainable economies, the largest shift in wealth in the history of the earth, and the growing competition for dwindling resources are, in fact, triggered by astronomical alignments, as the evidence indicates, then modern science seems to agree. The point here is that the changes do occur. They're happening now. The scientific evidence and the indigenous signs suggest that our lifetime is part of just such a clearing. Luckily, clearings like this one are few and far between. While this sounds like a good thing, the key is that before we can plant a new way of being in the garden of a new world age, we must first recognize what we need. Following the descriptions of global signs and imbalances that now have become commonplace in our world, the last part of the translation for the Hopi prophecy states that the way to choose the good path is as simple as the map itself. It says that when prayer and meditation are used rather than relying on new inventions to create more imbalance, then the people of the earth will also find the true path. In addition, the key to staying on the path of life is equally simple. It simply says, give love to all things, people, animals, plants, and mountains, for the spirit is one, even though the kachinas, or the expressions of the spirit, are many. The Hopi traditions of Oribi are a beautiful example of an ancient yet complete world view. They inform us of where we are in the cycle through the clarity of unmistakable signs. Then, they guide us with a practice, an actual way of being that is sustainable and one that we can easily follow. And with that practice, we are given the opportunity to choose how we experience the end of our great cycle and the transition to the next. So what did the Hopi map, the Mayan calendar, the Bible code, and other powerful messages from our past really tell us? Is it possible that by choosing a way of being, we can actually change the way we experience things, like the frightening outcomes predicted for 2012? While there are a number of new discoveries that show us how consciousness directly affects our world, they are generally variations of a century-old experiment that was designed to find out how much our beliefs really affect our reality and answer this question. On February 26, 1998, scientists at Israel's Weizmann Institute of Science repeated the famous 1909 experiment that demonstrated how the mere presence of people in the same room as a particular experiment actually affected the outcome of the experiment. Not only did the new experiments confirm that our world is affected just by being watched, but they also discovered that the greater the amount of watching, the greater our influence on what actually takes place in the world around us. In other words, the greater the focus upon the experiment by those present, the greater the influence their focus had upon the outcome. And herein lies the key to understanding what quantum physics and the Mayan calendar may really be saying to us about our power in the universe. A growing number of scientists have arrived at an inescapable conclusion. That conclusion simply states that there is a place where all things begin, and that place is in the realm of quantum energy. It's in precisely this realm that we find the influence of our thoughts, feelings, emotions, and beliefs. In this no man's land where all things are possible and the laws of time and space seem to break down, what scientists call quantum weirdness takes over. Also, in this place, all things become possible, and we influence the atoms of matter that become the reality of our bodies and our world. In 1957, Princeton University physicist Hugh Everett III carried these ideas even a step further, creating the theory that describes how the focus of our awareness creates our reality. In a landmark paper that included his many worlds theory, Everett described simple moments in time when it becomes possible to jump from one reality into another by creating a quantum bridge between the two existing possibilities. He called these windows of opportunity choice points, and he described them as the time when conditions make it possible to begin one path of experience and then to change that path by changing the focus of our awareness, our beliefs, allowing us to move into a new path of experience. From Everett's perspective of choice points, chaos, suffering, and destruction are certainly possible and maybe even probable if the course of human events remains on the same trajectory that it has been set on for the last two centuries or so. The discovery of choice points gives us the opportunity to change that trajectory. And this is the good news for the frightening scenarios of 2012. To the people who understand that the repeating patterns of a seed event also show us the best times to change unwanted patterns, the 2012 transition appears as a mixed blessing. They will be experiencing the birth of a beautiful new world, and at the same time, they will be experiencing the death of everything that does not support that new world. So while any time is a good time to make positive and life-affirming choices in our lives, it seems as if nature is conspiring to create the perfect conditions that make choice and change easier in our lives. The key is that we tend to experience those things that we most identify with. In other words, while disease and healing may both be happening at the same time, we will feel that the healing is dominant if this is where we place our focus. We've all been training to do this throughout our lives. We've all had the blessing of families, jobs, friendships, and romance while simultaneously the suffering and tragedy of the world has raged on. From World War II and the Vietnam War to the more recent wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, those of us not directly in the midst of the wars have continued the daily routines of our lives. While others were losing theirs in conflict, both realities were happening at the same time. We were also aware of both. However, in our everyday routines, when we get up in the morning and fix breakfast to prepare for the day, we generally identify most with what our day will bring rather than what is happening in someone else's day halfway around the world. So this kind of focus appears to be the secret to surviving the greatest change in the history of humankind as well. If we could identify with the life-affirming changes locally while doing what is in our power to help others globally, our individual choices become our collective focus for whatever 2012 brings our way. In 2005, the journal Scientific American published a special edition titled Crossroads for Planet Earth, which identified a number of scenarios, including those described throughout this audiobook, that, if left unchecked, hold the potential to end life as we know it on Earth today. Through a number of essays and reports, the experts present a strong case for a single, simple fact. That fact is this: our civilization cannot sustain the same path of violent competition, ever-expanding economies, the continued depletion of resources, and our growing contribution to greenhouse gases and climate change that we've traveled for the last 100 years. The convergence of so many problems compressed into such a brief period of time is what Harvard biologist E. O. Wilson calls the bottleneck in time. It's a period of maximum stress on natural resources and human ingenuity. The point the journal makes is that while each of the scenarios alone is catastrophic, all are happening right now, and now is the time of the 2012 shift. Time Code 19 states that there is a consensus among the best minds of our time that the great challenges of today seem to be converging toward what they call a bottleneck in time. Well, today, the sheer number of crises and the magnitude of their consequences are clear indications that we're heading toward a point where something must give. If they're left unchecked, our world could possibly plunge into the time of collapse and suffering envisioned by so many prophecies and predictions. For those living in such a time, it could very possibly seem like the Armageddon described in biblical terms, But both the prophecies and the evidence clearly state that none of these things ever need happen. Although the first Garden of Eden disappeared long ago, armed with what we know of world age cycles and what they've meant in the past, we can turn the darkest of possibilities into the seeds of the second Eden. Because of the scientific models and ancient prophecies, we now have the wisdom to see what's before us and to recognize the possibilities. Today, we recognize the need for vast and sweeping change in our relationship to the earth, one another, and ourselves. We recognize that everything from the way we live each day to the way we use the resources that are disappearing before our eyes must change for us to survive. It's because of our ability to recognize this path of destruction and to recognize that we do have a choice, that the new movements based in holistic, sustainable living and green industries have gained such wide acceptance. So what does all this mean for 2012? Are we headed into a time of catastrophe or 1,000 years of peace? Are we looking at Armageddon, Eden, or possibly both? The truth is, no one knows for sure. While the solar eruptions and magnetic reversals of our past were real, and our ancestors did survive them, such changes have never happened with 6.5 billion people living in the world. They've certainly never happened with so many people dependent upon the technology of power grids, microwave communications, computers, and global positioning satellites. No one truly knows the full extent of the consequences, how we would deal with them, or precisely what such a monumental experience may mean to life, our emotions, and our bodies. We do know, however, that ancient humans did experience similar cycles. While the biblical and oral traditions suggest that such a time is certainly not business as usual, the fact is that they lived to record their story, and that we're here to read it. New discoveries linking the physics of heart-based focus with what happens in the world around us tells us that how we experience the transition appears to be largely up to us. The results of the discoveries are conclusive. They simply state that the way we feel about our experiences has a direct effect upon what we actually experience. Time Code 20 clarifies this, stating scientific evidence strongly suggests that heart-based focus and heart-based living will have a direct effect upon the way we experience 2012 in our time of change. For our rendezvous with 2012, this suggests that if we live life focused upon all the bad things that could happen, we may miss the very life experiences that could actually keep those things from happening. Conversely, if we recognize our individual power of heart-based focus and understand how that power may be pooled into a collective wave that directly influences the life-sustaining fields of the earth, we may well discover that the hopeful descriptions of what follows 2012 are more than just a metaphor. We will have learned that we literally have the power to create a beautiful new world. The key is that the only way to do so is by working together. A powerful new project based upon an equally powerful new discovery now paves the way for us to do just that. While there is a lot that we don't know about consciousness, there is one thing that we do know for certain. Consciousness is made of energy. That energy includes magnetism. While we can explore the magnetic nature of consciousness for another 100 years and still not solve all of its mysteries, we can apply what we've learned so far to help us meet the conditions of a changing world. A growing body of evidence now suggests that Earth's magnetic field plays a powerful role in connecting us with one another as well as the planet. In September of 2001, two satellites orbiting the Earth detected a sharp rise in global magnetism that forever changed the way scientists view our world and us. Named the GOES-8 and GOES-10 satellite, each one showed a powerful spike of Earth's magnetic field strength in the readings that they broadcast every 30 minutes back to the Earth. It was the magnitude of the spikes and the time that they occurred that first called them to the scientists' attention. From a location of about 22,300 miles above the equator, the GOES-8 satellite detected the first surge, followed by a continued trend in the readings that topped out higher than any that had been typical for the same time previously. The key is that the time was 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 15 minutes after the first plane hit the World Trade Center and about 15 minutes before the second impact on September 11th of 2001. The correlation between the events of the attack and the readings of Earth's magnetic fields was uncanny, and it was undeniable. In light of the data, two questions had to be asked. First, were the attacks on the World Trade Center and the satellite readings actually related? If so, what was the link? It's the answer to this second question that sparked the research and the ambitious initiative that has followed. Subsequent studies by Princeton University and the Institute of Heart Math, an innovative research institution formed in 1991 to pioneer research and development of heart-based technologies, have found that the correlation between the GOES satellite readings and the events of September 11th are more than just coincidences. Subsequent studies by Princeton University and the Institute of Heart Math have found that the correlation between the satellite readings and the events of September 11th, 2001 are more than just coincidences. Following the discovery that the satellites had recorded similar spikes during events of global focus in the past, such as the death of Princess Diana and even during major football games, the factor that seemed to connect the readings was clear. The indications pointed to the emotions of the human heart. Specifically, it's the heart-based emotion of the world's population that results from such events that seems to be influencing the magnetic fields of the Earth. What makes this discovery so significant is that those fields are now linked to everything from the stability of the climate to the peace between nations. Among the new findings are two discoveries that give new meaning to what the satellites showed us on September 11th, 2001. The first discovery is that it is well documented that the human heart generates the strongest magnetic field in the body, one nearly 5,000 times stronger than that of the brain. This field creates a donut-shaped pattern that extends well beyond the physical body itself and has been measured at distances of 5 to 8 feet beyond the physical heart. New studies, however, using even more sensitive equipment, now suggest that this field may be so large that we end up measuring it in terms of miles. The implication of this discovery is that the heart's magnetic field responds to the quality of emotion that we create in our lives. Just as the intuitive link between emotions and the body seems to suggest, positive emotions increase the body's balance of hormones, heart rhythms, mental clarity, and productivity. And just as intuitively, studies show that negative emotions can influence as many as 1,400 biochemical changes in the body that include hormonal imbalance, heart rhythm chaos, mental fogginess, and poor performance. Discovery number two is that certain layers of the Earth's atmosphere, along with the Earth itself, generate what is now being called a symphony of frequencies, some of which overlap the same frequencies created by the heart when it communicates with the brain. It's this apparently ancient and almost holistic relationship between the human heart and the magnetic fields that make life on Earth possible that has led to a beautiful theory and the project that is exploring it. In the words of heart math researchers, the relationship between the human heart and Earth's magnetic field suggests a strong collective emotion has a measurable impact on the Earth's magnetic field. The implication is that if we can learn the language of the heart, the same language that Earth's protective magnetic shield recognizes and responds to, then we can participate in the effects that the field has upon all life. This is where this futuristic-sounding relationship becomes even more exciting. Changes in the magnetic fields that we access through our hearts have now been associated with shifts in the life-affirming qualities of everything from the activity of the brain and the nervous system to human mortality. These two discoveries have opened the door to an exciting new era of understanding our relationship with the Earth. From their revelations, the question has now shifted from, is there an effect between collective emotion and the Earth, to why not? If a large enough portion of Earth's population were to focus the strongest magnetic field of the human body upon one emotion in the same period of time, it makes tremendous sense that such a focus would affect the portion of the planet that operates in the same range of frequencies as the emotions. The relationship is clear. A change in the way we feel about ourselves and our world has the potential to affect the world itself. If the change is a positive one, then the effect of the emotions that result should be positive as well. Such a positive change is shown to create what is called coherence between the heart and the brain, and now it appears that the effect extends into the fields that support life on our planet as well. In the words of the HeartMath researchers, learning to regulate these human emotions is the next frontier in human evolution. The discovery that we may choose to create more coherence between the magnetic fields of the Earth and us has led to one of the most ambitious science-based projects in history. The magnitude of the project is profound, the implications epic. In light of the challenges posed by our time and history, this new project, called the Global Coherence Initiative, now makes it possible for anyone to learn the heart's language of coherence. In doing so, it now becomes possible for more people than ever before to participate in the changes that are taking place on the planet. The key to the Global Coherence Initiative is twofold. First, the Institute of Heart Math is developing the Global Coherence Monitoring System, which uses a series of newly designed sensors to specifically measure the changes in Earth's magnetic fields. The goal of this system is to measure how Earth's magnetic field affects human heart rhythms, stress levels, and even emotions. The early studies do suggest that, in fact, such effects are part of a two-way relationship. We're speaking to the field, and the field is communicating with us. This is where the second part of the initiative comes in. While we know that life on Earth is affected by changes in the planet's magnetic field strength, the data strongly suggests that life on Earth may actually influence the very fields that sustain us. So part two of the Global Coherence Initiative is an ambitious effort to teach people how to create the coherence within their bodies that enhances our everyday lives. The idea is that when a large number of people respond with a positive, common emotional feeling to a major global event, like a hurricane or a tsunami, it can affect the quality of the very field that connects us during that event. Just as the human stress experienced by a natural disaster can create an incoherent global stress wave, a positive emotional wave could create a global coherence wave. So to put into context precisely what such a project means and why it's important, we need look no further than our understanding of cycles and our place at the close of a great world age. It may be no accident that the Global Coherence Initiative is being developed now, in the first years of the 21st century, because it's now, at the end of a great world age, that the experts tell us we're facing the greatest number and the greatest magnitude of challenges ever experienced in 5,125 years of recorded human history. Now we're finding that some of those challenges carry the potential to forever end life as we know it on Earth. But at the same time, we're also discovering that we are born with a power to harmonize our bodies with the life-sustaining fields of the Earth in such a way that we can actually alleviate the potential suffering of those challenges. The way to do so is through the silent language of the heart. Time code 21 tells us that faced with the greatest number and the greatest magnitude of potentially world-ending challenges in 5,000 years of human history, we now discover that the key to our transition is in our collective feelings about the change. What a powerful, beautiful, and awesome convergence of circumstances. The way to ease the transition of the 2012 world age is to change the way we feel about the world and to do so together. Could we ask for a more perfect scenario? The Global Coherence Initiative is vitally important to the health and the future of our planet because for the first time, we have the ability, the reason, and the technology to transcend the ideas that have separated us in the past and work together to inspire millions of people to participate in a pivotal moment of change. At the very least, the project holds the blueprint to transcend the traditional boundaries of geography, culture, religion, and belief to unify a global community around a new way of living, the heart-based choices that promote global coherence. When you ask the descendants of the Maya why their ancestors disappeared long ago, they usually tell a story that sounds more like a plot from the classic science fiction film and television series Stargate than an indigenous history. They'll begin with an account of the mysterious timekeepers that tracked the cycles of the universe with unprecedented accuracy over 1,000 years ago. Then, for a reason that only the ancient prophet scientists could know, they left their temples, observatories, and pyramids forever. Just as mysteriously as they appeared, they walked into the jungles of the Yucatan and returned to wherever it was they had come from. Regardless of what their story means to us today, it's clear that whoever those original Maya were, they knew something in their time that we are just beginning to understand in ours. The key to their message is that their secret was more than the precise representations of time on a slab of stone. The one element of their wisdom that they could not inscribe as a hieroglyphic message is precisely the piece that gives meaning to the end of our world age today. From their viewpoint of Earth as a mirror of the cosmos, they viewed the great cycle that ends on 2012 as the end of an incubation period, the fractal gestation of human consciousness that is so beautifully described by people like John Major Jenkins and Jose Arguelles. As any birth is the end of the pregnancy and the beginning of new life, the Maya viewed our emergence into a post-2012 world as the beginning of a new cycle of history, complete with all of the opportunities that I've described in this audiobook and even more. From these perspectives, the solstice on December 21st, 2012, becomes a powerful window for our collective emergence into our greatest potential. Such a moment is so rare that we've been preparing for it since the end of the last world age, and it will be another 26,000 years before the same opportunity cycles around again for our descendants. Our final time code, number 22, reminds us that December 21st of the year 2012 is a rare and powerful window of opportunity for our collective emergence into our greatest potential. The possibilities of such an emergence bring to mind the ancient accounts of the Garden of Eden, a place that once held all of the possibilities of our greatest joys and heartfelt desires. If we're to believe the calendars, myths, and prophecies, it's just such a potential that awaits us following 2012. We could create a second Eden that picks up where the first one left off. Biblical correlations do suggest, in fact, that the last time an Eden appeared upon the earth was about 5,000 years ago at the end of the last great cycle. During that time, Earth's inhabitants had everything they needed to live in balance with the earth, enjoying vital, healthy, and long lives. As the choices of our post-Eden ancestors planted the seed events for everything that would unfold as the cycle that followed, they set into motion the patterns that define our world today. Some patterns, such as forgiveness and peace, serve as powerful reminders of what is possible in our lives, while other patterns, such as betrayal and war, have become the great challenges that divide us as people, families, and even nations. From cycles of weather to the balance of carbon dioxide between the oceans and the atmosphere, nature shows us that a pattern will repeat until something new replaces it. The change that accompanies the 2012 convergence of cycles is a rare opportunity to wipe away the patterns that we've outgrown from the past. At the same time, it's also a precious choice point to set healthy, new patterns in place for our future, and the future that belongs to our children and theirs. It's an undeniable fact that in the presence of the greatest challenges of our world, we are also changed as people. Can we recognize that the greatest threats to our familiar way of life may also serve as nature's nudge toward a new way of being? As we witness the chaos that accompanies the perfect alignment with our galaxy's core, are we ready to receive the greatest gift of all? The inner change that comes from responding to life's challenges with the cooperation and nurturing of a heart-based way of living. What instructions will we leave from our time to those who will go through the next world age and remember us as their ancestors? We've already answered these questions in our hearts. Now is the time for us to live what we've chosen as we emerge from the mystery of 2012 into a new world age. The stage is set. The choice is ours. The cosmos is waiting.